Glad to see you guys in church. Are you happy to be in church? Let me tell you how excited I get about coming to church to worship. This morning I came into church, I walked back in my office, and there's a brown paper bag on my desk, and it's got an apple fritter in it. And you know it's going to be a good day when you go in there and the grease is already showing little grease spots all over the brown paper bag. And I thought, man, that's the joy of the Lord right there. You know, I just feel something. And that's the way I feel when I get ready to come and worship with you guys. I just love to be in worship with y'all. So thank you so much for coming to church and for participating in worship. We don't want to be a church that watches the worship team. Right? We want to be a church that worships together, and their job is just kind of to lead us. So for the last couple of months, we've been talking about intentional spiritual formation, and we've been trying to really lay a foundation for what it is to be an apprentice of Jesus. And for our guide, we've been using this great book called Practicing the Way by John Mark Comer. If you haven't read this book, you should get it. It's an amazing book. It's been a great source of information on what it's like to really follow Jesus. To not just be a fan of Jesus, to be a follower, to not just be an admirer of Jesus, but to really be an apprentice. And so we started off with the three driving goals of an apprentice, and that's to be with Jesus and to become like Jesus and to do the things that Jesus did so that we can become like him. And then next we talked about spiritual formation and how, whether we know it or not, we are being formed. We're being deformed from God's original plan as we conform to this world. And that means all of spiritual formation towards Jesus is counter-formation. It feels weird. It feels counter-intuitive. We've learned that these practices of Jesus are not ways that we make God love us. They are not ways that we, you know, get out of hell or something. He already loves us. These are really just ways that we do what we can do to create time and space for God to do what we can't do. And that is to supernaturally transform us into the likeness of Jesus. But these practices only take us so far. And so to be fully transformed, we also have to meet God in our pain and in our suffering. And on this journey, one of the big roadblocks to this journey of transformation is sin. So we talk through the layers of sin and how God is faithful, not just to forgive, but to heal us from sin so that we can be fully transformed. And then last week, we started talking about drafting a rule of life. And this is just like a schedule. It's a set of practices and rhythms that just organize our life around spiritual formation. So a rule of life is the way that we choose to live by integrating practices like Sabbath and time in the Word every day and time in prayer every day and generosity and fellowship and time with God. And this, again, is just us creating time. It's creating space for God to do his work in us and transform us and make us more like Jesus. So I'm going to say it again. This is the last week of this series, but we're going to be talking about intentional spiritual formation till Jesus comes back. I'm telling you now, we are going to be talking about this from now on, because this is a key to becoming more like Jesus. These are steps we can take. These are things that we can do to participate in our own miracle of our own transformation. These are key tools that God uses us to transform us back into what humans were originally designed to be. You were originally designed to be fully trusting in God, fully dependent on God, fully connected to God. Like Jesus was in full communion with the Father. That's what you were created to be. That's how God designed us as humans, and that's what sin took away from us. And that's what Jesus came to recreate in us and to recreate through us. And so this series, it's just the beginning. It's just been like a primer, like a beginning. Following Jesus, being a disciple, being an apprentice to Jesus is a lifelong journey. That's a really great way to see this. This is a lifelong journey. Like all journeys, it's going to have ups, it's going to have downs, it's going to have times when it's easy, it's going to have times when it's hard. This is a journey. And they say a journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. So we have literally taken 8 really great like first steps. And so we're going to be picking up on this topic in the months to come and diving a lot deeper. But before we leave it for a while and before we go like any further in it, it's really important that we understand something really important about this journey, and that is that you were not meant to go on this transformation journey alone. You are meant to follow Jesus in community. That's how you're wired, to be with other people. And I know some of you right now are just saying, yeah, I'm an introvert, you know, that's not me. And I hear you say community, and the first thing, your response is automatically like, But could I say this to you in Jesus' name? You are so. Because this is the way we were created to be. And I know I say this every week, but it goes back to the garden narrative. I mean, Genesis 1:1 starts the Bible with the words, "In the beginning, God." It all starts with God. It doesn't start with you. Sorry. God, by his nature, right, at his core, is a relational being. That's who God is. Scholars call him a triune God, right? That means he exists as three unique persons in a relationship. Father, Son, Holy Spirit. And I'll say this again. God exists as a relationship. That is his way of being. 1 John 4:16 says, God is love. God is love. He is this caring, sharing, others first connection that we call love. God is not just kind of relational. He's not highly relational. He's not super relational. God is completely, fully, at his core, absolutely relational. Do you see that? Because I can do it again. Do you see that? Repeat after me. God is fully relational. Okay, we can go on. Stay with me. There's a little pattern here. Genesis 1:26. God says, let us make man in our own image to be like us. So this is the theological idea of Imago Dei, right? The image of God. It means that we're not God. We're not God. But we're like God. We're created in his image. And if God is completely, fully, at his core, absolutely relational, and if we're created in his image, then we are designed. We are created to be relational. And I think sometimes we look at this story of creation and we get really lost in the when of creation. You know, was it 10,000 years ago? Was it 6,000 years ago? Was it 200 million years ago? We get lost in the when of creation, or we get lost in the how of creation. Was it really literally 7 days? Was it really made out of dirt? You know, is it possible that God used evolution somehow in this process? Sometimes we get so worked up about the when, and we get worked up about the how of creation, and we forget about the why. Like, why did God create with that? You want to know your purpose? Ask the one that made you, right? Why did God create us? What is the purpose of man? God is absolutely relational. God created us to be with him. God created us to walk with him and talk with him and partner with him. God created us to be in a relationship with him, to experience him and to experience his love. And he created us in his image. That's so, so important. By definition, an image looks like something. Right? That's what an image is. We have an expression, we say, oh, that kid is a spitting image of his father. What does it mean? It means he looks like him, right? If you see him, you've seen his dad, right? You know people like that. And so, like, if I see a statue of, Mozart. Mozart lived 250 years ago. I barely remember him. But I never met the man, but I know what he looked like, right? How? I have the statue, right? We have this image of Mozart. Somebody at some point commissioned a sculptor, an artist, and said, make an image of Mozart so people can see what he looks like. Similarly, because I am such a big deal, a while back we commissioned a young artist to create an image of me, Dawson Carter. Do we have that picture, Matt? There it is, right there. He's 5 years old, and if you can, I don't know if you can see that really well, but that's the image of me. If you've seen that, you've seen me, right? Because look, he's got glasses, right? Countless words are coming out of his mouth, right? People on the front row are down there asleep or whatever. So this is me. If you see that, you know who I am. Just by looking, it says right there, Pastor Larry, you are the best preacher. There you have it. If you've seen that, you've seen me. That's the purpose of an image, right? It shows us, it shows the world what something is like. It shows the world who someone is. So one, God is absolutely relational. Two, he created man in his image. Therefore, we are created to be relational. Still with me? Because there's more. Genesis 1:27 says, God created man in his own image. Here comes the rest. In the image of God, he created them. Doesn't say he created him, singular. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. This is a really important idea. Humanity was created in two parts, male and female. It doesn't say God created Adam in his image. Also, he created Eve in his image. It says in his image, he created them. So God's image is comprised of both. You hear that one? God's image is comprised of both. It takes both of them to image God to the world. So you see what that means? You cannot fulfill your purpose in life alone. You can't be the image of God, reflecting him to the world by yourself. For us to fulfill our purpose in reflecting God to the world, we need each other. You see that? God created us in his image to reflect his relationalness to the world, and he created us in two parts. Neither one can represent God by themselves. We have to be together. A brilliant theologian once said, God is like a fluffernutter blizzard from Dairy Queen. Have you had them? You got to get one of those things, man. Those are life changers. They're amazing. A fluffernutter blizzard is a beautiful, multifaceted, complex, delicious, wonderful thing. It is all about this relationship. Yeah? It's about this like coming together of many parts. And you know, ice cream's part of it. Ice cream's part of it. It's no secret I love ice cream, but ice cream alone is not the image of a fluffernutter blizzard. Right? You can't just look at ice cream and fully see and understand and grasp and taste the deep, profound complexity of a fluffernutter blizzard. Reese's peanut butter cups are really good. By themselves, they're awesome. By themselves, but they're not a fluffernutter blizzard. They do not fully reflect its divine goodness. Marshmallow cream is amazing. Margaret thinks it's one of the basic food groups. But you can't see and know and experience a fluffernutter blizzard just through marshmallow cream alone. It takes all three items in relationship, right? In a glorious, divine, beautiful coming together to be what they were created to be together. Because God, at his core, is relational, and because he created us in his image, and because he created us in two parts, you can't image God on your own. I can't either. We can only serve our purpose on earth together. And this is why God said in Genesis 2:16, it's not good for man to be alone. Why? Because man can't fulfill his purpose alone. No human being can image and reflect an absolutely relational God unless he himself is in real relation with other humans. So here's a good question. Does that mean you have to be married? Does that mean you have to be married to fulfill your purpose as a human and reflect God to the world? No. No, and I'll show you why. When it says it's not good for the man to be alone, does anybody want to guess what Hebrew word is translated as the man? Best guess, come on. Adam. Thank you. Thank you for knowing that. Adam. And what does Adam mean? It means humanity. So Genesis 1:27 actually says, let us make Adam. Let us make humanity in our own image. Genesis 2:16 actually says, it is not good for Adam. It is not good for humans to be alone. Why? Because no man or woman can fulfill their purpose alone. No human can reflect the image of God by themselves. And don't get me wrong, I love marriage, right? Marriage is beautiful. a lot of the time, right? We've been married 44 years, 44 years. And I want to tell you something. The 44 years that I've been married have been the most recent years of my life. And I mean that sincerely. Marriage is a beautiful, like, coming together of two humans in a really unique, special way that reflects the relational God that created them. And in fact, as they come fully together in a relationship, they become even more like God because they create human life. So it seems like marriage is one of God's favorite ways of humans coming together to become his image. But it's not the only way. When two friends filled with his spirit fully come together, when a group of humans, a church of humans come together, they are fulfilling their purpose in their relationship, by their relationship, through their relationship. They're reflecting the goodness and love and relational oneness of our Creator. In God's original plans, humans were, you were created for relationship with God and with other people. And through that relationship, you were created to reflect God to the world. That's why God created Adam and Eve and put them in the garden. And in the garden, things were beautiful for like 15 minutes, right? And then enter the snake and temptation and sin, the relationship destroyer, and its subsequent curse. And the curse was that humanity was separated from God. And the humans were separated from each other. Specifically, Genesis 2:16 says, there's always now going to be this conflict between men and women. Generally, the curse is, we were created to be in relationships, and now those relationships are jacked up, right? We're out of whack. We're out of relationship with God. We're out of relationship with each other. That's the curse that sin brought. But Jesus came to what? Reverse the curse. That's why Jesus came, to recreate a new humanity that, like him, wasn't a slave to sin and wasn't subject to that curse, a humanity who could be reconciled to God and who could be reconciled and have real relationships with each other, and who could return to our original design as being relational beings reflecting the image of a completely relational God. And that's not just in Genesis. I mean, look in the New Testament here. Jesus, when Jesus calls his disciples, this is going to be Mark 1:17, Jesus called out to them. It doesn't say he called out to him, singular. He called out to them, and he said, come and follow me, and I will show you how to fish for people. And they left, not he left, not singular, they left their nets. Jesus didn't call an apprentice, right? Jesus didn't call a disciple, singular. He called a group. He called a community of people to follow him together in community. Technically, it should be, and I will show y'all how to fish for people. So Jesus sees us as we are. He knows he's one that created us. He sees us as we are. We are people that were designed for community like a family. In fact, just a couple of pages later, Mark 3:13, Jesus goes on a mountain, it says, and he calls out the ones that he wanted to go with him, and they came to him, and he appointed 12 of them and called them his apostles. So not only did he choose them in community, it's a specific number. He chose 12. Why 12? Why not 11? Why not 13? Why not 140? Right? Why 12? And I'm telling you, there's a lot. Jesus didn't say anything accidentally. Right? When Jesus called 12, that was a hyperlink for them. If you've been around here a while, you know what I'm talking about. These people knew their Torah, right? He's mostly speaking to a Jewish audience right now. These people, they knew the Old Testament like you know your ABCs, right? Anything, if you made a reference to something in the Old Testament, they went, oh yeah, I know what he's talking about. Right? They knew it because they had it memorized. And so when Jesus called 12, that was a hyperlink that immediately made them think back to Israel's beginnings, the 12 sons of Jacob, who became the 12 tribes of Israel. The family tree of God's people, the family of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. When he chose 12, what he was saying is, like, I'm forming a new family. What we call church is not a building It's not a weekly event. It's not even just a community. It's a new family. And this family isn't based on genetics or blood. It's based on apprenticeship to Jesus. In fact, a few verses down, Mark 3:32, a bunch of people come to Jesus and they say, oh, your mothers and your brothers and sisters are all out here. And Jesus said, who are my mothers and brothers? And he looked around at the people sitting in the room with him. Who's he seeing? He's seeing his disciples. He's seeing his followers. He's seeing his apprentices. He's seeing us. And he said, these are my mothers. These are my brothers. Whoever does God's will is my mother and brother and sister. And the word that is used here in Greek is a really good word, adelphoi. It literally means a sibling. And this word, adelphoi, is used in the New Testament just as often to describe followers of Jesus as the word disciple. Paul uses this word adelphoi 130 times. It's a really big, really important word because Paul and Jesus see Jesus' followers as brothers and sisters. If you read through the New Testament, one of the main ways that Paul and other New Testament writers describe salvation is as an act of adoption, right? Through Jesus, we've been adopted into God's family. So God is our Father. Jesus is our big brother. So what does that make us to each other? It makes us brothers and sisters. It makes us family. So about a year ago, my daughter Kristen and her husband Jason adopted a little girl, Penelope. I think we got a picture of them. So she, when that happened, not only became their daughter, she became Ryan and Waylon's little sister. She became part of a family, right? Whole relationship, not with two people, not with one person, with the whole family. And it no longer matters if she's black or white or rich or poor or a boy or a girl or a Republican or a Democrat, right? She's family now. She's family now. In the same way, when you became apprentices to Jesus, you became part of a new family. And John Mark Comer says, this family transcends all the lines that divide us, race, class, gender, politics. It is really important. Before we kind of put spiritual formation aside for a second, it's really important for us to see this. Jesus not only wants to transform you into his likeness as a person of love, he wants to transform us into a community of love, a family of apprentices. And I'm not saying you shouldn't follow Jesus alone. I'm saying you can't follow Jesus alone. You can't. It's not a thing. You can't follow Jesus alone. That's like following the Dallas Cowboys to the Super Bowl. It's not a thing. It's not a thing. It's just not a real thing. You can't. If you want to get to the Super Bowl, that ain't the path. Okay? You can't. If you want to become transformed, right? If you want to become like Jesus, that ain't the path. You can't do it. You can't follow Jesus isolated. You can't follow Jesus alone because that's not how Jesus sees you. That's not how Jesus created you. That is not what Jesus modeled for you. There are no lone apprentices. There are no individual disciples of Jesus. I mean, think about the whole idea that we've been talking about, this whole spiritual journey, the idea is for us to be formed into a person of love. Jesus said the greatest commandments are to love. So how would it work if you were formed into a person of love and you don't have anybody to love? Right? Spiritual formation is a relational process for relational beings created in the image of a relational God. And this is one of the key reasons that, I mean, church matters. Church matters. People love to say, well, I can be a Jesus follower and not go to church. You know, I can be a Jesus follower and not meet with other Christians. But can you? Can you be a Jesus follower? If you're following Jesus' model, if you're following Jesus' teaching, being an active, involved, committed part of a Jesus community is a part of your apprenticeship. But when we talk about church, I don't just mean this. I don't just mean this gathering on Sundays. This is amazing. I love this. This is one of the best parts of the week for me. I love it. But God works in all shapes and sizes and styles of church, right? But it's usually in the smaller, more relational spaces where real transformation happens.
There is a growing body of research from the social sciences that groups relationships into different categories based on group size and the depth of vulnerability. One of the most widely accepted paradigms is from Dr. Robin Dunbar of Oxford. It's called Dunbar's number. He calls our inner circle our intimates. This is 1 to 5 people max who deeply know us as we are, our shadow and our light, and who ideally love us as we are. Of course, many in the West have no intimates, the fallout of Western individualism and the breakdown of the family. But hopefully, you have a few people you can bear your soul to, a spouse or best friend or mentor. The next circle is our friends, which goes up to 15 people. This is the people we do life with. We practice the one another's of the New Testament. We help each other move. We go on vacation together. We share meals. We drop off groceries when people are sick. This is our community. The next threshold is around the 150 person mark. Sociologists call this the law of 150, as 150 is about the maximum number of people we can be in relationship with, and it's the optimal group size for human organization. While there are some very large churches, this is also about the size of most local churches. And we draw on this wider social network for all sorts of things. This is our village, per se. The final circle is our tribe, the larger group we identify with and belong to. We don't know all these people personally, but this group is where we get a vision of life and a call to live with meaning and purpose. For many in the secular world, this could be a company or political party or a sports team. For us as followers of Jesus, this is the church of Jesus. And when it comes to our spiritual formation, we need relationships across all four circles. Jesus had relationships at every layer. He had 3 intimates, Peter, James, and John. He had the 12 and a few close friends like Mary and Martha. Then he had the group of 120 in Jerusalem. Then the larger church that he left behind. Healthy people have relationships in all four circles. But our deepest formation, growth, healing, and change all happens in the smaller circles. We all need what Celtic Christians called an anam cara, or a soul friend, to bear our most vulnerable burdens with. C.S. Lewis once said, "The essence of friendship can be summed up in the phrase, 'You too?'" Meaning, friends come together around a shared joy, like backpacking or surfing or reading fiction. In a spiritual friendship, the shared joy is Jesus. And we need a community to do life with. We were created to live deeply relational lives. And it's in the first two circles of our closest community that we experience deep, lasting transformation.
So I know some of us are introverts, and I think maybe that sounds a little scary to have these relationships with other people. And I know all of us probably have at least some mixed feelings about the deeper relationships. Right? It's the casual stuff is pretty easy, you know, when you're around 500 people to, hey, I like those people. We start getting these deeper relationships, it gets a little more scary. So I think we have like mixed emotions about it, because we have on one hand this almost aching for these connections that we were created by God to have. We want to love and be loved, and we want to know and be known. But at the same time, you know, part of us is scared to death of it, and especially if we were raised in an unloving home or if we've been wounded by relationships in the past. But remember, Jesus is recreating us to be like him. It's a big deal. He's transforming us. That is his work in us, and he does a lot of that work in these close relationships with our 2 or 3 intimates and within our group, 10 or 15 real close friends, where we can go, you know, deeper in our talks and be more transparent with each other and even hold each other accountable. And that's really hard to do in a group like this with 300 of your closest friends, right? So these smaller groups are where we can really be part of the transformation process for each other. So this is where it gets sticky for the Sunday morning only Christians, because it's really possible. I'll say it's really easy to go to church every week and even get kind of involved and never have a real transformational Christian friendship. So we have to be intentional. We have to be intentional. Remember, this is all about us intentionally participating in the miracle of our transformation. This is all about us intentionally being part of the miracle of Jesus making us more like him. Intentional spiritual formation. We have to be intentional. And for a lot of us, that starts with finding a smaller group than this. I love you guys. Love you all together, right? But real, intentional, spiritual transformation into the likeness of Jesus is going to happen a lot more in a smaller group. So if we really want to be transformed back into the humans we were created to be, I would just say you have to find a small group of people to do this with. And maybe it's one of those groups that Lauren talked about today. Or maybe it's another group here at the church. Maybe it's something else. We have about 40 life groups at this church. I mean, one of these is bound to be a fit for you. I would really just encourage you to talk to her. She's back there at the Connection Center. Just go back and just talk to her and tell her what you're looking for. If we really want to become the humanity that Jesus is modeling for us, if we really want to become and transformed into this amazing humanity that he's empowering us to be, we have to be in real, deep, transparent, honest relationships. And those relationships happen a lot more in circles than they do in rows. And they happen a lot less around a stage and a lot more around a table, especially if there's food on the table. And I don't know why. It's a thing, man. I don't know. There is something about, yeah, we always joke about, you know, you pick your group, not by the Bible study they're doing, but what kind of cake they have, right? But there's something about eating together. This Acts chapter 2 church, they started this church and it set the world on fire. It changed everything. It became the model for church in the New Testament. And I'm sure they did a lot of cool stuff with whatever, music and programming. I'm sure they had a vacation Bible school and a really great car wash and all that. But it says they focused on four things. Show them, Matt. So this is what they focused on was the apostles' teaching, prayer, fellowship, or like real friendship, and eating together. Two of the four things, right? Half of what they were focused on as a church was eating with their friends. So land the plane here, right? Because of the way God created you and because of how Jesus sees you, and because of the model of Jesus and his church, and because you want to be transformed, and just because it's fun, please find a group of real Christian friends that you can eat with and share with and get deep with and get vulnerable with, people that are just as committed to spiritual formation as you are. And don't just think of them as friends and people to eat with. Think of them as how Jesus sees them, as transformation partners. Because time with them creates time and space for Jesus to transform you and to use you to transform them. You were designed for community. Right? We were created to follow Jesus together. This idea of community is a huge part of our transformation journey. So that's it for now on intentional spiritual formation and these practices. We are definitely going to be picking this conversation up a lot in the future. Just as we ease into this important concept, just remember what we've talked about now for a couple of months. These practices are not things that we do so that God will love us, right? God already loves us completely. God already loves us perfectly. These practices are not things that we do so that we can get out of hell, right? We're saved by our faith in what Jesus did for us, not in what we do. These are things that we can do to create time and to create space for God to do what only God can do, and that is transform us into the likeness of Jesus so that we can not just live, so that we can thrive, so that we can flourish, so that we can matter in this world and in his coming kingdom. Amen? Okay, let's pray. Father, thank you just for who you are. You're a relational God. You love us completely in ways that we can't even understand. No matter what we do, no matter where we've been, no matter what we've thought or said, you're somehow able to still love us and want this relationship for us. So thank you for loving us that way. Thank you for loving us so much that you sent Jesus to even overcome our sin and make it possible for us to have a relationship with you. And God, I just pray that as we're going through these practices and more we're opening up our lives, right? We're opening up time, we're opening up space for you to do your work in us and make us more and more like Jesus. God, as it's happening, will you just remind us that each of these practices has value? You chose each one of these practices. God, will you just remind us that we, even when we can't, you can. And you live inside of us. So even when we're doing something that's hard for us, God, remind us that it's by your strength that we're doing them. And God, will you just remember that we cannot fulfill our purpose as human beings alone. We cannot image you. We cannot reflect you to the world around us by ourselves. Just remind us, it's not a weakness. It's a holy, beautiful need that you've created in us, that we need each other. So remind us, God, to lean into each other, to be there for each other. And I just pray that you'll give each one of us the courage and the strength. It's hard that first night to ring the doorbell at this house and all. I know it's hard for people, but God, I just pray that you'll give us the courage to do what you've created us to do, to follow Jesus in community. In his name we pray. Amen.